My name is Wade Rowett. I'm an associate professor of psychology in the Department of Psychology and Neuroscience here at Baylor. My background and training is in social psychology, personality psychology, and also psychology of religion. And so the studies I'll be talking to you about today really operate at the interface of those three subdisciplines in psychology. This quote from Gordon Allport is an oft-cited quote. He was a pioneer in both the study of personality, conducted one of the first dissertations on personality psychology ever. He also has written several really good books about the social psychology of prejudice as well as religion and the individual. And he wrote, that the role of religion is paradoxical. It makes and unmakes prejudice. While the creeds of the great religions are universalistic, all stressing brotherhood, the practices of these creeds are frequently divisive and brutal. So there's a paradox. Theoretically, the incorporation or the internalization of religious teachings and values should lead to more positive attitudes of tolerance. And as I entered this particular room, I noticed that on our left we have this notion of loving God, and on our right we have this beautiful tapestry that's talking about loving neighbor. And so you have the underlying theory, you have this notion that we should be internalizing these values of compassion and tolerance and acceptance of others, and yet loving one's neighbor is not always practiced. And so that's really what interested me and began to interest me about this area of religion and prejudice. Early studies reveal positive associations between religiousness and prejudice, positive correlations, but it's certainly not that simple. So there are a variety of dimensions of religiousness, and here we're talking about the individual's religiousness, and there are several different measures that have been developed to tap into this notion of individual religiousness. We focused on measures of religious fundamentalism, Christian orthodoxy, which is the degree to which one reports agreement with Nicene Creed type statements, and then, as Allport distinguished, some different religious orientations, underlying religious orientations and motivations. So an intrinsic religious orientation, the person would be engaged in religious thinking, feeling, behaving, activity, as an end in and of itself. The extrinsic religious orientation, those individuals are engaging in religious practices primarily as a means to some other social or personal end, so personal coping, or they see religion as a congenial social activity, like a country club. And then the quest religious orientation, these individuals are asking existential questions about religion. They view religious doubt as positive. They're also quite open to personal religious change, so a shift in being more or less religious for individuals who have this quest orientation toward religion would be viewed as positive. And then there are different measures and forms of prejudice. Social psychologists have developed some different measures of prejudice. An explicit measure of prejudice would be a self-report measure. So to what degree are you liking or disliking this particular group? And you would just simply self-report attitude toward individuals based on race or sexual orientation or some other group. Implicit measures are oftentimes reaction time measures, and they get at a more automatic, perhaps non-controlled, really kind of gut instinct, first impression measure of prejudice. And I'll say a little bit more about the implicit measures in a moment. We've used both implicit and explicit measures in our research. And then there's the distinction between prescribed or kind of prohibited kinds of prejudices and non-prescribed prejudices, those prejudices that might be allowed or even encouraged in some religious contexts. So what I'll be describing today are three studies that have been completed and published, and thanks to the Institute for the Studies of Religion here at Baylor, these studies, the manuscripts, the publications are available on that website as well that Byron mentioned earlier. So the first study is focused on predictors of implicit racial prejudice. So college students in this particular study completed a race IAT. IAT stands for an implicit association test. And what you see here is the design for this particular implicit association test. It's a reaction time measure. And so in block one, for example, there are 20 trials where all that's presented are the race category names, or you could use photos. If you'll notice in block two, there are 20 trials where individuals are categorizing terms, just words, that are pleasant or unpleasant. And what's unique about this particular test is it's what we call a double discrimination test. In blocks three and four, in blocks six and seven, individuals are categorizing terms from both categories simultaneously. So you will have kind of presentation of perhaps a black person's name, and you have to associate that into the category black, pleasant. You might see a pleasant word that would have to be associated again into that category of black, present. And if you need clarification on this procedure, now would be the time to ask, because it's going to be important to understand what this particular test is measuring. Any questions about the IAT and what it's measuring? So they're categorizing these terms quickly, and we're going to look at the difference between the speed to associate black, pleasant, white, unpleasant with their speed to associate the reverse. So the reaction time, it's a program called Inquisit. It's a millisecond reaction time, so they're pressing a key on a keyboard to make a judgment. Actually, they have to make a correct judgment, so if they make a classification error, it's still timed until they make a correct judgment. Correct. So in this particular test, you know, the participant might make 200 to 220 or so key presses, and we're measuring the reaction time to categorize or associate a person with something that's pleasant or unpleasant. It's immediately presented. As soon as they make a response, the next stimulus is presented in the center of the screen, and they make a key press left or right to sort. For them, they can control the interval between the blocks, so they would press the space bar to go on with the next block, and it's not timed. The blocks are in this order, correct? So the race IAT yields a measure of implicit racial prejudice. We also administered the self-report measures of fundamentalism, Christian orthodoxy, the religious orientations described. We also included a measure of right-wing authoritarianism and a measure of self-reported social desirability, impression management, that sort of thing. To control statistically for the tendency to underreport on a self-report measure degree of religion, or the degree some participants, particularly at Baylor, may overreport being religious and view that positively. And we do find that to be the case here at Baylor. Correct. They are college students here at Baylor. And so here's the table of correlations, and you have to focus. The pointer isn't working, but in the very bottom row is the race IAT effect. And so our higher value on that is indicating more implicit racial prejudice or more negative attitudes toward African Americans relative to white on that reaction time test. And in the first few columns, in column one, you see religious fundamentalism, two, Christian orthodoxy, and then the religious orientations. Basically, I show this to you to suggest at the zero-order correlation level, there's not much interesting going on. We know that these measures of religiosity are highly correlated. We also find that these measures of religiosity are highly correlated with right-wing authoritarianism. And we know that authoritarianism is associated with prejudice as well. And so in a regression analysis, we wanted to simultaneously control for all these variables. And these were entered simultaneously. And we find what to me is a curious kind of suppressor effect, that right-wing authoritarianism is positively associated with implicit racial prejudice. But notice in this particular analysis that Christian orthodoxy is negatively associated with implicit racial prejudice. So if you simultaneously control for those effects statistically, it is appropriate to say that Christian orthodoxy is associated with a reduction in implicit racial prejudice when controlling for these other factors, like authoritarianism, fundamentalism, and impression management, or social desirability. And this was really one of the first studies to look at religion as a personality variable and prejudice at the implicit level. So we're going beyond self-report. We're going beyond what people are just saying, I think I'm tolerant, to, well, are you able to associate African Americans with positive qualities very quickly? In that IET task, you know, people make a lot of errors. If you have negative ideas about people and you're trying to fake positive, it's hard to fake a very quick reaction time associating black with present. So that's study one. In study two, college students completed a sexual orientation IET, added some self-report measures of attitudes toward lesbians and gay men, and they completed the same measures of fundamentalism, authoritarianism, Christian orthodoxy, and social desirability. I will state that, in case you don't know, the homosexuals are not valued by most religious organizations. So this would be a group toward which prejudice is allowed by many different religious denominations. Now, there's quite a bit of variability in that, but in general, religiousness is associated with negative attitudes toward homosexuals. So you have one group based on race where the religion is prohibiting or discouraging prejudice. You have another group, homosexuals, where most religions are encouraging or at least allowing or permitting negative attitudes to be expressed toward that particular group. And what we find in a parallel analysis, well, I need to mention first, on the implicit measure. So this is a multiple regression of the religion variables on the left, fundamentalism, orthodoxy, authoritarianism, impression management, on the implicit attitudes toward gay and lesbian. And note, higher values of this particular IAT effect reflect more positive implicit associations toward homosexuals. So as the values of the implicit association test increase, their attitudes toward homosexuals are more positive. And in this particular analysis, we find evidence of support for an intolerance hypothesis, this notion that as religious fundamentalism increases, attitudes toward homosexuals on an implicit level become more negative. And again, that's controlling for orthodoxy, authoritarianism, and social desirable responding. In the third study, my colleagues in sociology and in the Institute for Studies of Religion were kind enough to share their recent Baylor Religion Survey data set, in which they ask a host of questions about individuals' religiousness. They also ask questions about social distance and comfort with closeness with individuals in different race and ethnicity groups. So in this particular sample, from the Baylor Religion Survey, there are 1,588 adults who had really clean, good data. And this survey was administered by the Gallup organization. It was a combination of phone and print study. The survey was conducted in 2007. We created, kind of bootstrapped, a measure of religiousness. And so we theoretically suggest that religiousness is a function of frequency of attendance at religious services, frequency of scripture reading, frequency of prayer, and then a single item self-reported religiosity. And so religiousness in this particular study is an aggregate of those four variables after they were standardized. The social distance scales are used to estimate racial attitudes, and they ask participants to estimate how comfortable they would be with increasing levels of intimacy with people from different racial groups. And in this case, we asked, or the survey had questions about comfort with closeness with African Americans, Asian, and Hispanic individuals. And we created an aggregate score. So we're looking at general racial prejudice operationalized as comfort with closeness. So how comfortable would you be working with a person of one of these groups if a family moved in next door to you, dining with, and if your daughter married someone who is Black, Asian, Hispanic? So it's somewhat of a blob variable, if you will. It's a very general, broad indicator. And then we also have the Baylor Rudin survey included four items about attitude toward homosexuals. So we just aggregated that together. And I realize this particular figure is small relative to where you are. General religiousness is in column one, and general racial prejudice is the very bottom row. And the correlation between general religiousness and general racial prejudice was 0.08. So very small positive correlation, a negligible correlation. In that sample size, it's statistically significant, but that is simply a power of the statistical power you get with a large sample size. It's a very small effect, and one that would be trivial or insignificant in a smaller study. And attitudes towards homosexuals, there's a positive correlation there, and it's a large positive correlation. So general religiousness was correlated 0.53 with attitudes towards homosexuals. So they're expressing more negative attitudes towards homosexuals. So three tentative conclusions, and then I'll wrap up and take some questions. One, dimensions of religiousness correlate positively with non-prescribed prejudices at both the implicit and the explicit level. Second, religiousness is negligibly associated with measures of explicit racial prejudice. And again, I will mention that both of those measures can be deliberately controlled. You can self-report more or less religiousness. You can self-report more positive or negative attitudes, and it's pretty easy to fake. The third point is on this measure of implicit racial prejudice that is a little bit more difficult. Well, it is more difficult to deliberately control. We find that Christian orthodoxy is associated with less implicit racial prejudice or more tolerance, which is an important finding. What's really, I think, important for psychological science and others in the social sciences begin to look at what the underlying mechanisms are. And so why are religion and prejudice associated? From these correlational studies, technically, we really can't say what the mechanism might be in any of these studies. They're correlations, and we're really limited. Our hands are tied behind our back, so to speak, when we start to talk about the mechanisms that may be responsible for connections between religion and social evaluation. We speculate that religious persons or organizations may socialize some attitudes, discourage some forms of prejudice, encourage negative attitudes toward value-violating persons or groups. It's probably not a controversial mechanistic explanation. But what we're trying to do now in our lab, and I'll tell you a little bit more about this if there's interest, is we're trying to experimentally manipulate religion. And this sounds odd. You really can't assign some people to be religious and some people to be non-religious. You can't disentangle that from the self. You can't assign some people to be theists and some people to be atheists and then observe some behavior in a controlled environment. So this is complicated. But there are some priming methodologies used in cognitive neuroscience and social neuroscience. And these priming methodologies allow you to activate underlying mental representations supraliminally, slightly above awareness, or subliminally, slightly below awareness. Now, at first, when I heard about these priming methodologies, I admit I was a skeptic. I didn't really believe in this notion of subliminal influence whatsoever. Having read studies published in the journal Science and in other high-quality social science journals, I've become more interested. For example, people who are asked to hold a cup of containing a cold drink, iced coffee, versus people who are asked to hold a cup of hot coffee, that single manipulation can and does influence perception of warmth of a person who handed them the cup of coffee. So if you want someone to view you positively, you should ask them to hold a cup of warm coffee first, And more than chance, they will perceive you to be more interpersonally warm than cold. Now, this kind of blows my mind. Next, people primed with rude versus polite words. Those primed with rude words are more quick to interrupt an experimenter to tell them that the experiment that they're done with the experiment. They'll interrupt a conversation somewhat rudely. A priming effect on social communication. They prime stereotypes. College students who are primed with old age-related words walk slower down the hall after the experiment is finished than people primed with young aged stereotyped words. Again, there's something going on. There's a prime to behavior pathway or expressway, as these researchers talk about it. And if you can activate these underlying constructs with these primes, you can study a host of social behavior. Well, some social scientists are starting to use this methodology to study prejudice and other social behaviors. So we've around the country and in Europe and in Canada, researchers have primed religion simply by presenting words very quickly outside of awareness in a priming methodology. I'll explain it if you'd like. And then they study all kinds of social behavior. And they found that people primed with religion words are more cooperative and pro-social and more helpful. They're also more honest, so they cheat less on an experimental task. They also work harder. People primed with a religion solve more anagrams than people primed with neutral words. And in most of these studies, it's independent of the participant's religiousness. So you could take a person who's a non-believer, prime them with religion, and you see some of these similar effects. So it doesn't appear to be activating the individual's religiousness per se, but something about the mental representation of religion and perhaps its activation of other related constructs like compassion, tolerance, helpfulness, pro-social behavior, lack of antisocial behavior that we've heard already. And yet what we have here is an experimental design where we can now manipulate, at least at a cognitive level, the underlying mental representation of religion. So in three studies in our lab right now, our current experiments, we're simply priming religion or neutral words in college students, and we're measuring prejudice. And I have to say, my personal bias, not scientifically speaking, was that priming religion would lead to tolerance. I really thought that's what we would find. And if you activate religion in college student sample, those who have that mental representation activated will report more racial tolerance, more tolerance toward value-violating outgroups, and so forth. Counter to my intuitions, we found the opposite now in three experiments, that when we prime religion, we're finding more negative attitudes expressed toward African Americans. And right now we've honed in right now on racial prejudice. And we can't explain this. We don't know why this is the case. But we suspect that we may be activating something to do with authoritarianism. We suspect by priming religion, we may be activating something to do with Protestant work ethic, which has been shown in some other priming experiments and self-report experiments to be linked with anti-Black attitudes. And so I'll leave you with that, several experiments, and then these current more interesting priming experiments. And I'm now ready to take any questions that you might have. Yes? A couple comments. One would be the extraordinary power of the situation. As a social psychologist, I think there's a wealth of evidence to suggest that within each person there's a capacity for good and bad, and if the evil. And if the situational variables are strong enough, even a person who has a strong internal belief to act in a particularly compassionate way toward others could behave in a very different way, that sometimes the power of the person is overrided by the power of the situation, and that may have happened, and it's certainly not to condone things that happened during combat war experiences, but those situations are remarkably powerful, and you see individual differences to behave in a particular way sometimes muted. So when you see rescuers of the Jewish Holocaust, for example, engaging in what we would, I think, agree is altruistically motivated behavior, that becomes very interesting. And in the social psychology experiments on altruistic motivation or egoistic motivation for helping, you do see a powerful altruistic influence toward helping behavior. The question about religiousness and altruism is a little less clear in the social psychology experiments on helping. And that may be for a different talk, but very quickly, to summarize 30 years of research by people like Dan Batson and others, it appears that religious persons self-report being helpful, so they will say they will help, but then when presented covertly with an opportunity to help, they may not. And it really depends on the underlying motivation that's being evoked by that situation. If distress is what's being evoked in that particular situation, sometimes we help just because it reduces our own uncomfort or discomfort at seeing another person suffer. And in other times, observing that leads to an empathic response and identification with the person suffering. And the early studies on religion and motivation in helping are mixed, and they're not as clear as we would like to show a connection that religiousness is really a key component of the altruistic personality. Though you see anecdotal reports of that in college student samples, religiousness and the altruistic motivation to help hasn't been borne out as strongly. Yep. Well, the first question, are there studies in other countries? Yes. And really, these studies are motivated by kind of a social identity theory, in-group, out-group, us versus them. So if you're doing cross-cultural work, it's important to identify in that particular culture groups who have been historically disadvantaged or who religion may say are more or less acceptable. So if we go back, you know, here to love your neighbor, and there's a question about, well, who is my neighbor? And a parable of the Good Samaritan is told, you know, there's this tension between two particular groups there that today would fall flat if you're asking college students about their attitudes towards Samaritans or Jews or other people. So that would be my comment. Yes, the answer to the question is yes, but the selection of the out-group is important. So it varies culturally on what the particular targeted out-group might be, Protestant, Catholic. And then, are the results depressing? I'm not really ready to say yay or nay on that. What I think what these kind of results show is that there's some link between personality and religious dimensions of the self and social evaluation and social categorization. Social categorization is a natural process. We sort people in groups speedily. It's heuristic. It aids in a variety of cognitive and emotional processes. I don't think it's depressing because there can be an internal motivation to respond without prejudice among persons who are religious. And so if religious persons realize these kind of implicit, automatic, negative responses that may occur and are aware of those and have an internal motivation to respond without prejudice, that can be done. A person can behave in a more pro-social, compassionate way by choice if they're, again, attuned to their quick underlying first negative reaction. Yeah. Sure. So if you couldn't hear that, there's at University of Minnesota behavior genetic perspectives on religiousness, altruism, and other behaviors, hopefully illuminating some of the early studies by Waller and others out of the Minnesota Twin Study showing that there is a genetic influence on religious orientation. That Waller studies published in Psychological Science in about 1990. So we do see that there is some heritability of these underlying intrinsic religious orientation specifically, as I recall in that particular study, and hopefully they'll elaborate on what they've been doing in the next 20 years since that. Thanks. The comment is that natural disasters, tsunamis, et cetera, oftentimes the initial responders and outpour of social support and instrumental support come from individuals in churches and religious organizations or mosques or synagogues. My comment would be I've noticed there was some data in the Baylor Religion Survey about helping and volunteering in organizations, and it's interesting to me that oftentimes members of churches are very helpful toward individuals in the church. They oftentimes will volunteer to help through the church toward these kind of relief efforts. And I remember a question in the Baylor Religion Survey that asked about volunteering for to help just community kinds of support. So you do engage in helping others in the community that's not associated or through the church. And I remember there that generally religious persons are not volunteering for community organizations just to help, but they help through the church, and they often, many times, will help individuals within, to use the social psychology terms, kind of the in-group. So there's definitely something about religion that is leading to compassion, helping behavior, broadly defined in field studies and other places you see this. I think the question for psychologists becomes, what is the underlying motivation for that help? And is it truly an altruistic motivation to reduce the suffering of the other person, which it could be, or is the underlying motivation more egoistic and to reduce one's own distress that's been prompted by seeing this mass devastation on the coast of Texas or Louisiana or in some other country where they've been devastated? And that question about answering, you know, getting at what the underlying motivation is in a controlled experiment is more difficult to do, especially in these natural experiments. Yeah. So the comment is that with regard, I'll paraphrase a little bit, with regard to prejudice or something like that, there are underlying emotional responses that are occurring that can be measured with galvanic skin response, fMRI, other imaging techniques. Social neuroscience, cognitive neuroscience, neuroscience straight, is further ahead of psychology of religion in that regard. And so certainly we have seen several studies showing what areas of the brain are activated when people from, black persons or white persons' faces may be presented in amygdala area and hypothalamic limbic system is activated. What we don't have are studies where religion might be primed or brought into that particular equation to see what's happening at that level. Now, in some of these studies, we are asking about emotion because there's clear evidence, kind of getting back to the evolutionary origins of this, that some prejudices may be related to fear or fear of safety kind of response. So you may have a negative attitude toward a particular person that is, you're receiving some input from the environment. There's some internal emotion mechanism within us, and it's producing an output of fear. And yet toward another group, take homosexuals, for example, you could do by show of hands how many of you are afraid of a gay man, for example. Not many of us have this really innate fear for safety when confronted with homosexual. But on an emotional level, the disgust mechanism is pretty high. Whether you ask about physical or moral disgust, people will self-report more physical, moral disgust associated with sexual orientation, and the attitude there at the emotional level may be rooted there. Again, what we need to integrate in psychology of religion are some of these more advanced imaging techniques, galvanic skin response, that sort of thing, to see if if that's a good mechanistic explanation for why we're seeing differences in social evaluation among individuals who are more or less religious. There's some. Yeah, we haven't set up our studies to properly sample freshman, sophomore, junior, senior. We're getting the white rat of college students. We're getting the college sophomore primarily, but we do see differences between freshmen and seniors, and we see more tolerance in individuals as they're going through the academic process than among freshmen, but we're not reporting those kinds of results. But if we go back and look at the data, we do see those trends. Gender differences, you do see gender differences in attitudes toward homosexuals, not so much with regard to racial prejudice. So males tend to be more negative, particularly toward gay men, but overall, and women tend to hold slightly less negative attitudes. They're still negative, but they're less negative. Thanks for those questions.
And I believe our lunch is at Penland, and I hope you all know where that is. Thank you for coming.